Welcome to Who Is She? A Bechdel Test First podcast. For each episode, my Bechdel partners in crime set out to champion and discuss a pioneering woman in film who we think should be on your radar. I'm joined today by those very partners in crime. Hello to you, Steph.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Caitlin.
Hiya, Beth.
And hello, Karina.
Hi, Beth.
And I'm your host, Beth Webb. Our podcast today spotlights the work of Channing Godfrey Peoples. Channing's debut feature, Miss Juneteenth, is released in the UK on the day that this podcast is coming out. It follows Turquoise, who's played by Nicole Beharie, a former Miss Juneteenth winner now trying to make ends meet in Fort Worth, Texas. She hopes that her teenage daughter will enter the contest and receive better opportunities than herself. We're going to play a quick clip from the film and then ask our big podcast question, who is she?
Please sign in.
Yes.
Turquoise Jones, is that you? I haven't seen you since the pageant. It slipped my mind that you have a daughter old enough to be in the pageant. How old are you?
14, about to be 15.
About to be.
How wonderful that you're looking to replicate your success. And I know how important that scholarship is, like it was for you.
Now, if she's accepted, she'll need to maintain a 3.5 GPA, represent herself well in the community, and attend all rehearsals.
Okay.
Good luck to you both.
What's her problem?
I beat her.
So that was a clip from Channing Godfrey Peoples Miss Juneteenth. And today I come to Steph for an outline of Channing's career and why she should be on your radar. So Steph, Channing Godfrey Peoples, who is she?
Yeah, so Channing Godfrey Peoples, she was born in Fort Worth, Texas, and she went on to study at the School of Cinematic Arts in Los Angeles. And this is her first feature debut, but she has written and directed a few shorts. They're kind of a mixture of documentary and fiction films. But her first feature debut, she was actually mentored by Charles Burnett when she was developing this film. So I think a lot of exciting stuff surrounding this film and her kind of career.
It definitely sounds like there are some great people backing her. For this episode, Karina had an incredibly charming chat with Channing about the film and her creative process. We'll go to that interview now and then take a deep dive into the film itself.
You talk so much about your personal relationship, not only with Miss Juneteenth, the pageant, and I know that you didn't actually enter the pageant yourself, but you have managed to create such a personal story, and even without doing the research when I first watched it, I could tell that this was a story that was coming from a place of wisdom and knowledge and lived in-ness, and that's how the film feels. And I wondered how you managed to retain such personal authenticity when film is such a collaborative process. I mean, how do you stop the cooks putting their spoons in the broth, and how do you stick to the story that you want to tell?
You know, there were places like I'm thinking about the bar in particular, you know, and like the funeral home. Those are family friends, you know? So there were places I knew intimately. And so in you know, dealing with my collaborators, like I would show them photos, you know, and we kind of came together. I would, you know, show early visuals, like, I'm thinking about Gordon Park's segregation series. That was kind of an early inspiration, you know, for the film. And so, you know, I'd show the production designer and the cinematographer, you know, photos from that series. I think also, you know, I was describing the community, and the community is one that's interesting because it's a really close-knit Black community, you know, that I felt, you know, that I was a part of growing up. And it's now being gentrified, and like the places and spaces, many of the ones that you see in the film are places that people have elected to hold on to through the generations, you know, their legacy businesses, that people have a sense of pride and say, this is mine and I'm going to hold on to it no matter what. And as a result of that, you know, everything in the film, like there's an aspect of the film that needs to feel lived in. The way I kind of described it to my collaborators was that everything needs to feel like it's slightly past its expiration date. And the way that I came to that was because, you know, one of the producers who happens to be my husband is from North Carolina. Yeah. And when he came over, he looked at the community and was like, you know, everything feels like it's slightly past its expiration date. And I was like, that's the perfect way to describe it. Mm. But I love that about the environment, because like there's this sense of like grit to it, you know? And I wanted to see that grit in every aspect of the storytelling, but there's also, you know, people are prideful and there's a sense of pomp and circumstance, and all those things inform the way the film ended up feeling like and looking like.
A little more on how the film looks like. I really enjoyed the subtle use of colour and the regularities of certain golden yellows or purples. Was there any significance in the use of your colours?
You know, that's another thing. Like, I build the film in the way that I'm inspired. And the community, you know, I was talking about the sense of pomp and circumstance. There's, you know, it's a colorful life there, you know, no matter what the circumstances are, you know, there's this will to survive, but there's also this sense that people are enjoying their life, they're enjoying each other, they're enjoying the sense of community. And there's also this warmth that I felt. And so, you know, I needed the film to visually feel that warmth no matter what. I mean, we're talking about turquoise navigating, you know, some economic circumstances in the film, but I still wanted to, you know, elicit that sense of like of feeling alive and that warmth. Mm.
Mm, that's definitely landed very, very well. So let's talk about your lead, Nicole Beharie. She's fantastic and she's so muscular in the whole film. She's literally in, I think, is she in every scene? What I loved about her performance is that she was able to flick from this stern, hard mother to this wistful, melancholy, looking back at her life, romantic person. I guess it's a testament to your direction, but what was your tricks to make creating such an ambidextrous role for her?
Yeah, I mean, that was from script level. She's such a, you know, gifted actor. But I think a couple of things happened, and I'm sorry if I'm a little all over the place. I'll try to get to the end of the road, but so I had written the film, and, you know, in writing the film, there was like tons of world. And as you refine the film, you know, it really, I was focusing in on Turquoise's journey and really being able to navigate Turquoise's arc. And so, you know, Turquoise started, you know, appearing in, like you noticed, almost every scene, you know, in the film. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was going to have to find an actor who could, you know, navigate Turquoise's emotional journey. Now, in the writing initially, I had, you know, a really like tougher love version of Turquoise on paper, because I originally had written it from the perspective of really having watched my mother, you know, navigate motherhood and try to reconcile her own dreams, you know. And I really had, something changed, because I ended up, right around the time we found out we were getting financing, I found out I was pregnant. And you may have read something about this, but I literally like remember being like, okay, if this is an art imitating life. And by the time we went into production, I obviously had my daughter, you know, I was a relatively new mom. Mm-hmm. But I just remember after having my daughter, like I was both, I experienced, and I'm just being real, I experienced two different feelings. I was like, joyful, you know, I was like at this little human being, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is my person. But I was also terrified, you know, I was like, how am I gonna, I have to, like, I'm responsible for this little, you know, baby's life, and, you know, for her to have the best life. And, you know, I was still navigating my life as an artist. I'm making my first feature film, and, like, you know, I don't, you never know how these things are going to turn out, you know. Yeah. I don't know what my future is going to be, and I have to take care of this little child. And I was experiencing some of the things in real time that Turquoise is experiencing, you know, in her life, just about wanting to have the best life for her daughter. And so that changed my direction completely. I still, maybe not completely, but it changed a lot. Like, I still would go in with Nicole, and I knew that we had this tough love version of Turquoise on paper, but I'd go in and say, look, we've got, no matter what, we've got to find the joy.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I can imagine from any mother that I speak to, the whole world changes, obviously, and just the whole looking after a whole new person on this planet is quite scary from what I hear. And so we were talking, you mentioned how you drew upon your experiences of your own mother into the writing of Miss Juneteenth. But as well as motherhood, there's like a beautiful mother-daughter relationship that goes on in the film. There's also a beautiful sisterhood between all the women in the film. And I wondered if there's any films that you drew upon or took inspiration from to create that. For instance, I've likened the film to Support the Girls more recently, Eve's Bayou, Crooklyn. I wondered if there's any other films that you took inspiration from.
For sure. I mean, I first want to mention that, like, my first inspiration was just from life itself, because, like, growing up in the community, like, Turquoise is so much, you know, she's the women in my family, she's the women in the community, like, you know, like mothers, grandmother, aunts. Like, I felt a sense of support from women, and also a sense of, you know, I was kind of talking about that grit earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, they were, you know, there was a grit about them, a sense of determination, but also they carried themselves with a grace, you know, like you could see them, like, you could see them working hard, but, you know, you could easily miss how hard the work was, because there was a grace in which they were carrying themselves, you know. So those were my early inspirations, just from life itself. I think, you know, I ended up coming to cinema later in life. So, like, my first entry was in community theater. Mm-hmm. There was a small community theater on the side of town I grew up in called Sojourner Truth, coincidentally. And later I fell in love with literature. You know, I love Toni Morrison, Alice Walker, you know, all these literary greats. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I discovered independent film later in life. And I remember, like, you know, seeing films, like, and some of them won't be independent that I mentioned, but I remember seeing, like, Julie Dash's Daughters of the Dust, you know, and, you know, just the visual images of the Black women in that film were just, like, visceral for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really, really stunning. You mentioned Gina Prince Bythewood's, you know, Beyond the Lights, and that's more contemporary, but I really love that film. Cassie Lemon's Eve's Bayou, you mentioned, was really lovely. This is not obviously a woman filmmaker, but, like, one of the, I was talking to a reviewer at one point, and he mentioned, he was like, this film reminds me of Claudine. And I was like, absolutely it does, because I love Claudine. You know, I thought it was just, you know, I remember just being really, really inspired by that film. Also, I'm, you know, one of my favorite filmmakers, it's probably not a secret because I tell everybody, but Charles Burnett is one of my favorite filmmakers.
Yeah, and you were mentored by him. That's incredible. What was your biggest lessons from the great Charles Burnett?
You know, he's so brilliant. Like, you can literally, like, you know, I would just sit there and listen to him tell stories. You know, I just feel like he's someone that's just so, you know, uniquely aware of his environment, you know, and he's someone who, and this is just what I'm more discerning from the work, you know, he's someone who just gets the details and is able to, like, put the details on screen. And that's something that I've just been inspired by his work, you know. just the specificity. Like, I love, one of the things I love about his work in particular is, like, you can literally, like, I'm thinking of in Killer of Sheep, like, there's a scene where you can just, like, you sit there and there's a man at the table holding the teacup. And, like, it's just the most fascinating thing to watch, you know? And I just love those kind of details. And there's just, it's such a specificity to his work, and his composition is out of this world. I could talk about him forever, but.
Which female filmmaker working right now, or not working right now, most excites you and should definitely be on our listeners' radar? And if you can recommend a female-focused film for us as well.
Gina Prince-Bythewood probably excites me the most right now, just because she's, like, working across genres, you know, and bringing out some really challenging and exciting, you know, work into the world. And I think there's a human quality to her work that I really, really enjoy. And also, she's just a fantastic human being, you know?
Yeah.
So she really excites me. I'm going to circle back and tell people, if they haven't seen Daughters of the Dust, they have to see it. Just because, you know, there's this, first of all, the cinematography is out of this world. The direction is out of this world, you know, and it brings us to a world we haven't often seen, you know, it's based on the Sea Islands. And it's just really beautifully done. You know, it's a masterwork that I feel like was, like, so far ahead of its time. You know, I don't think enough Black filmmakers are recognized for doing, you know, as masters, and especially not Black women. And it's a masterwork in and of itself.
And something that you said, that I know that you've said about Miss Juneteenth, that you want it to contribute to a more diverse and positive representations of Black women. Could you give us some other examples of other positive representations of Black women that you can recommend? Or ones that you grew up with, or ones that thought, yeah, those, that's me there.
Oh my goodness. I mean, they were so, like, far and few between. It's hard. That's why I told you I turned to, I definitely turned to literature, because those were where those representations were. You know? I mean, it's, you know, actually seeing films with Black women leads are far and few between, you know, and they have to be fought for. And that's probably why it took me so long to get my film made. And, you know, like, I really try to focus on doing work about, not only about the lives of Black women, but the interior lives of Black women, like, fully fleshed out representations of Black women. I noted Gina's work. I noted Cassie Lemon's work. I talked about Daughters of the Dash. I'm just trying to think, because I literally always keep them on a list when I
But it's crazy, isn't it, that I think we're both sort of sitting here going, yeah, what were the films that best represented? And I think now that you're talking a lot about literature, and I think about the amount of books that my parents gave me rather than films, it probably was for the same reasons, is that that's where they were, not on screen, especially in the UK.
I mean, it's crazy, because I didn't even feel a void about, you know, having representation of Black women. And that's crazy to me, but I think that's because I was such an avid reader. And there were, like, you know, Toni Morrison, for example, like, laying out these complex portrayals of Black women in books. And that's where I was, you know? And so it's silly to me now, because of course there was a void, but I also, you know, wasn't one of those folks, like, you know, I wasn't, like, devouring films when I was growing up, which is funny that I'm a filmmaker now, you know? I devour films now, but I, you know, my head really was in cinema and in the theater, you know, in many ways. So it's funny, because there's just so much that I would love to see on screen, you know, from literature that I explored even growing up.
So that was our Who Is She conversation with the wonderful Channing Godfrey Peoples. Now, I'm coming to you, Karina. This was her debut feature. What feels fresh about this film?
What's interesting about this being her first feature is that it doesn't feel like her first feature at all. It feels very lived in. It feels very well organized and structured and very confident. And I think this is what is setting her up to be a really, really interesting filmmaker. This is what she's going to start with in terms of feature filmmaking. But also in terms of what makes it feel fresh is an unfortunate one. And that is the, you know, the big representation question and the big representation debate and conversation, in that there aren't many films like this that have such an authentic portrayal of this part of Black America. From talking to Channing, it's interesting to hear her talk about how Black cowboys are still such a prominent thing in her hometown, and how there's the particular bar that you see in the film, which is such a cross-generational mingle of people, and you never get to see that on screen as much as one would think, considering it's so wide and prevalent. So I think, in from talking to her and listening to her past interviews, this is something that she really wants to put on screen and show her reality. So yeah, that feels fresh, but it shouldn't.
Yeah, no, I think what I really, you know, found moving about this film was its kind of focus on legacies and shared ideas around womanhood and kind of, you know, passing stories and love and support on through sort of generations. And the dynamic between Turquoise and her daughter is so wonderful to see. I think she's quite a strict mother in lots of senses, but there's a lot of, you know, everything she does is for the better of her daughter and for the kind of goodness of their family. And it seems to me as well that it's not a tragic story in any way. There's obviously issues that are happening to these people, and you know, they have their problems, but they're handled with such kind of respect and care, and it's never a situation of kind of trauma or negativity, and that to me feels really, really fresh and promising.
It is nice when the relationship does hit its rocky periods that it's never without tenderness. Like it never seems toxic, especially between the mother-daughter dynamic, which I think is quite hard to bottle, but the channel's done a really lovely job of it there. Steph, what did you think as a directorial debut?
Yeah, I think what really struck me as well is that there's really not much kind of yelling or shouting that much. Maybe like a couple of points, like around Turquoise's relationship with her ex, not ex, like it's a really kind of complicated relationship that they have. And I think she's done so well to have all of these different relationships. So there's Turquoise's relationship with her ex, there's her relationship with her daughter, there's her relationship with her mum, there's her relationship with her boss, like there's all these kind of branches spanning out. And she's done so well to fully flesh out those relationships and really kind of give space to the people that she's writing about and directing. It really feels like less of a film about the storyline of her entering her daughter for this pageant and more just about like her going through this few weeks at a really important time for kind of her and her daughter.
There's definitely a sense of endurance with Turquoise as well. Like there are instances where I did wish she would scream and shout. I know that it's very like, you can see it simmering beneath the surface. There's a really pointed scene where she's crying, but there's no noise coming out of her mouth. It's just this kind of very set, stern face that she has, and just the tears sort of coming down, and she, you can see her censoring herself almost. It's very powerful, I thought.
In tandem to what you were saying about the quietness of this role, I think there's a lot of internal dialogue that you as the viewer are welcomed into, and I think that is a testament to both the direction and Nicole's performance, in that no matter what scene that she's in and what situation she's in, you're always in her head and you can feel what she's feeling, whether that be this moment of resilience, that moment of daydreaming, that moment of hope, that moment of despair when her partner messes up again or her daughter doesn't quite do what she wants her to do. But it's a really, really good performance. I haven't seen anything like it for a long, long time. And the fact that she's in every scene doing so many different roles within this one character, it's incredible.
Caitlin, Juneteenth is an established American event to some, it's still not to others, the president being one of them. Do you think this film works on an international scale? And by that, I mean, do you need to know what Juneteenth is to enjoy this film?
I think it's obviously very important that people do know what Juneteenth is and understand the kind of the power of that day and what it means to you know, Black people in America. But in terms of engaging with this film, I don't think it's kind of necessary that you fully grasp exactly what it is or what the pageant is in Texas, because it's much more about those things providing a backdrop to this story of kind of mother-daughter relationship, and the mother's kind of longing for her daughter's kind of future and her understanding of where she's going to go in her life. And it does, you know, it really grounds the film in this tradition for African Americans and its importance. But yeah, it's not necessarily a kind of, you're not going to understand the film if you're not aware exactly of what the context is.
I think once you actually understand what the significance of the day of Juneteenth means, it does give a certain depth to the understanding of the film. You don't need to understand it, but when you do, that aspect of freedom, liberation, celebration has that extra sheen. And I think that is the only benefit of really understanding it. But it's from the premise and from the get-go, you'll understand because it's explained. So, yeah.
I think as well, the significance of the Miss Juneteenth pageant and it being this kind of like, if you win it, then I think they get a scholarship to historically Black university of their choice, and obviously to Turquoise. That's something that she really wanted and like really wants for her daughter, because I think we get films about pageants that are mostly about kind of white women, and it's more of like a beauty contest, am I the most beautiful, this and that. And then this is kind of, I think it highlights maybe the importance of being given that opportunity, being given that scholarship and that money and that opportunity to actually kind of get a head start and get a leg up in a way that maybe people in that community don't often get. I mean, we always have these conversations about like, are pageants good? Are they bad? Are they kind of anti-feminist? But then it's like, I think it's really interesting for that film that it's like, you're using your femininity to get this leg up, and it's that kind of duality of, you know, is this feminist, or am I just kind of going to use it to actually get this head start and opportunity.
I'm a real sucker for films that are able to capture the real, like, the fabric of a community with all its idiosyncrasies, and it's something that Karina and Channing touched on in the interview. But Steph, I wanted to know from you, what was your reading on the world that Channing has built for Turquoise?
You know, it feels like a world that she knows and a world that Turquoise can exist in. Like, it feels like something that you might see every day.
Everything that we saw on screen was authentic to Channing's hometown. This was her stomping ground. This was her place of home. And she was, because people recognised her and because people knew her from around the way, they gave her that access to these particular places, which I don't think any other filmmaker, well, she says herself, lots of other filmmakers wouldn't have been able to penetrate that level of authenticity and that depth. But she would just go around and say, hey, I'm making a movie. And they'd be like, sure, you can have the bar. And then she would shut down the town for a little while and everyone would be like, oh, is this your movie? And she'd be like, yeah. And they're like, cool. So there was a real sort of community vibe going on, which the way I've heard her describe it sounds so fun and so loving and so so much like this community event where everyone came together to put themselves on the screen because they knew it was going to be in a good light by a good person that got them. Because you know how you could, that could go either way. Somebody comes in like, hey, I want to put you in a movie. And it's like, are you going to portray me in the right way? But she's managed that. Everything about that feels good, real. Good and real. And I don't know about you guys, but I feel like I've been to Texas now.
I think as well, it's like the places you see in the film are very... they're kind of like set locations. Like, you don't really, we're not really looking at sort of Texas as this sprawling landscape. We're looking at the bar, the funeral parlor, her home, and I guess, you know, where the pageant activity takes place and things like that. And it feels very very grounded to those specific places that bring the community together, rather than kind of looking at a broad overview of what the state is or what the, you know, what the country looks like. It's really about honing in on those spaces that they visit regularly and that they know and they love and they share with people. You know, it's very much about community in that way, I think.
Now, we have done the thing that I think we do a lot in the Bechdel podcast, and I'm going to leave this in because we get so excitable when we're talking about a film that we answer all of the questions that I've written in one go. So we've got a dedicated question on pageantry, which we've all jumped in and shared our thoughts on. We do this every single episode. We get really excited and we answer all the questions in one. So I'm going to end just by asking, I guess something that I really loved about this film is it's a joyful film about a black woman, which is something that I know has certainly come up recently as a criticism. Black women are getting very frustrated with the fact that there aren't enough films that capture a black woman's experience in a joyful or uplifting way. I guess I'd love to know your readings on Miss Juneteenth as a joyful film.
It is a joyful film because, I don't want to give it away, but it's, you know, joy is relative. And I think a lot of the joy that I see in this film is a woman finding her truth, her journey, her dream reimagined. Because a lot of this is about, as she says herself, a dream deferred. So even in the context of this year, I think at the beginning of this year, we all thought that we were going to have all these big hopes and dreams for what was going to happen. And it hasn't happened that way because of everything. And it's not that you just feel down about it, you just reimagine what that dream's going to be. And that's what you see with Turquoise. You see her making the best of what she's got and coming up trumps. And ultimately, this mother-daughter relationship is where the joy lives. And it's so beautiful. And it really is them against the world. And that is best thing to take away from this film, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think kind of what I was saying a bit earlier about this idea of shared womanhood and kind of legacies of womanhood, not to sort of spoil what happens in the film, but there's a Maya Angelou poem that features within the film, and I think that's the way that that's used and kind of translated through the years between Turquoise and her daughter is a really powerful symbol of exactly as Karina says, this kind of dream reimagined, and the way that both women can be empowered through this dream having been changed from, you know, its initial aims and goals and what Turquoise imagined for herself, but you know, the power that she then gains from having this dream be reimagined for her daughter and changed in those ways. It's really powerful to see both of them thriving so much through this kind of shared goal.
I think as well, like, I've seen a lot of kind of people saying online, mostly just to engage with black cinema, black art, you don't just have to be watching films to do with slavery and that kind of more hard-going side. Obviously it's important to be educated about that, but it doesn't have to be mining those experiences to make films. And that, I think maybe that's where the kind of antebellum tiredness is really setting in, that kind of people need to be watching and engaging with that more joyful stuff, and that those films and art that's like this film is certainly rooted in that history with the whole kind of Juneteenth stuff surrounding it, but there's so much more going on, and it's more about those people and those characters kind of living now in the 21st century and with all the kind of joy and pain that they're going through. It's important to engage with that stuff.
It's balance. We just need balance. We can't just have this one narrative of these poor black people always in pain. It's just not okay. We just need balance. And we need stories of black love and black joy and black girl magic and all the hashtags you can think of. And with Miss Juneteenth, there is a lot of that balance, but reality. And that's what I think really strikes really well with this film.
And so that concludes our latest episode of Who Is She? Miss Juneteenth is released in cinemas and on demand from the 25th of September. Thank you to my wonderful Bechdel girls. And we'll be back in a few weeks. Stay tuned to our social media channels for updates. Who is She? A Bechdel Test Fest podcast is a Bechdel Test Fest production. It was hosted by myself, Beth Webb, and produced by Steph Watts, with additional help from Karina Agibus and Caitlin Quinlan. Our music was written, performed, and produced by Zoe Mead. Check out her band, Wildest, on all streaming channels.